Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Church Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Almino. Now in a moment, I'll be joined by my co-host, Mike Neff, to discuss a great weekend of racing at Phoenix Raceway. Joey Logano was victorious at Phoenix, edging out Kevin Harvick in a green-white checkered finish. However, the racing was thrilling with the additional traction compound, as well as the 2020 short track package that was introduced this past weekend for the first time. We got Saturday's Xfinity Series winner Brandon Jones joining us on the podcast to discuss everything Phoenix and how he was able to earn his second career Xfinity victory. But before we get started, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on Apple Podcasts, as those ratings help us out tremendously. Now let's talk Phoenix with Neff. All right, Neff, I got to be honest with you. I didn't get to watch the Cup race fully live this weekend at Phoenix. However, from what I did watch, it was very good. And then I DVR'd it on Monday, and I thought it was a really good race. I know our opinions differ a little on this, you know, talking before the show. But compared to last year at Phoenix, this new package was stellar compared to from what we got last year.
Oh, yeah. There's no question that this package was a way better show than last year was. But I was kind of middle of the road on it. I'm with you. I got to see the last 100 or so laps live, and then I rewatched it twice on DVR and didn't make it through both times. So there was exciting moments, and I'm glad that Goodyear is figuring out how to make the tires wear out, but it's still... The thing, I guess, that drives me crazy at Phoenix is the insanity on the restarts, which is fun to watch, but it's just stupid driving all the way down on that apron on the dog leg. It would be exciting if there was more treachery to it. If they painted that or something to where it was really slick and you kind of, you could make the move, but it might bite you. Kind of thing, then it might be exciting.
We'll see where the ball is there.
It's just everybody driving like lunatics for two laps. I give Kyle Busch credit of everybody all weekend. He did it in the Xfinity race and the Cup race. He was the only guy I saw that literally pulled down onto that apron just past the start finish line and didn't get back on the track until they were on the backstretch. I mean, went all the way through the dog leg, all the way through one and two on the apron, and then pulled up onto the track. I didn't see anybody else that could pull off that move all weekend, and it benefited him. Late in the race, he restarted 13th, and he made, what, half a lap, and he was up to 8th. And then the next restart, he was up to 3rd or 4th by the time they got to the backstretch. I mean, he took huge advantage of that. Unfortunately for him, I think that strategy really took a toll on his tires. And it seemed like in the Xfinity race and in the Cup race that after he had made those moves early in that final run with fresh tires, they just didn't last at the end of the race. So, I mean, I'd give the race a B, a solid B. I thought there was strategy. I thought tire degradation was a good thing. We did see some on-track passes for the lead, which was nice. But I still think we're making progress, but I still think we got a little bit more to do with the package.
Well, we're not as far off as I thought we are, because I'd give it about a B+. You could go A-, I think, if you really like the race. And I did really like the race. And like you said, there was a lot of lead changes, 20 in fact. I think 18 or 19 of them were under green flag, which, I mean, like I said, compared to last year, major improvement. Now, the short track package kind of reminded me of the 2017-2018 Phoenix. And let's remember, like, it was just only 2019 where we went to these, what Dale Jr. would call them, giant-ass spoilers.
Billboard spoilers.
And, you know, they gained a couple inches on the splitter. So they dropped they created less downforce. They took a lot of downforce away. And 6 inches or so was chopped off the spoiler. So, multiple inches taken off the splitter. So these... I mean, to me, from the outside perspective, now, I've never driven a race car, but these cars, to a degree, looked not undrivable, but definitely back in the driver's hand, like 2017 or 2018, compared to last year when they were slot cars, essentially, right?
Yeah, there's definitely more driver input this time around than in the past. there's still a ton of side force on these cars. Right. So even without a big spoiler, when they get out of shape, it's still hard to spit them out. I mean, they got out of shape more than they did last year, but they still don't spin out. And that's one of the encouraging things that I've heard with the 2021 car is in three tests, I believe they've had two guys have spun out in it. And that is encouraging to me that they're saying, unlike the current car, when you lose this new car, the side force isn't there to catch you. And it's putting more, again, more back in the driver's hands, which is what we want. So that is an encouraging sign along the way. But for Phoenix, I was happy to see a decent crowd. It wasn't huge, but it was not empty. And I thought the shows were great, both Xfinity and Cup. It's awesome seeing an Xfinity regular guy beat a couple Cup regulars in the Xfinity race. And we get to talk to him in a little bit, but Brandon did a whale of a job. I mean, he did what he had to do and drove a really smart race and ended up winning it.
For sure, and we'll get to that here in a little bit. But you mentioned how, you know, these cars weren't really spinning out. But then I look at, like, Denny Hamlin and that on the lap, 65 incident with Keselowski and Blaney. Blaney was just an innocent bystander. But Hamlin got loose underneath Brabham.
Blaney, once again, having the worst luck in the history of luck.
But that was a case of Hamlin just getting loose underneath Brad, and that's something that last year we did not see at all on the short tracks. And, I mean, that led to a lot of disappointment from fans, which is why, and competitors and media and everyone, really, which is why NASCAR had to do something. And in post-race, Steve O'Donnell kind of praised this Sunday's race, and he was asked about, is because of how bad the fall Phoenix race was, is this kind of the direction they went in? And he said yes in a politically correct way, because something had to be done. And you mentioned the tire wear. I mean, there was, three or four, both RCR cars, Buescher, multiple cars had flat tires, which that's never a good thing. But the tire wear was definitely a key point of this race. The traction compound was another key point. I mean, you had Kevin Harvick, for instance, getting to everyone's left rear corner panel, moved Keselowski out of the way at least one time. And the traction compound, as we've seen with other shorter tracks, like a New Hampshire, which is a mile, just like this one, much different. But it works. So I know it's an element that, I mean, is out of really everyone's hands, right? Because it's the track laying it down, and I can't come up with the phrasing I want to say, but I don't know. I like the traction compound, even though it's kind of, you shouldn't have to rely on it for good racing.
Right. I'm grumpy old get off my pit box guy. So I'm more of the old school. You race what's there.
Exactly.
And you deal with it. But at the same time, I like the element of it. And the thing that I think has been an unintended consequence that is really interesting to me is the fact that we saw it all weekend. In practice, nobody was going up into that. Yeah. And then the Xfinity race rolls around, and guys kind of teased with it and got into it a little bit, especially later in the race, but weren't really heavily into it. And then by the end of the Cup race, you had guys with all four in it all the way through the corners. And in fact, they had to go a little bit higher because the lower section of it had actually worn off the track. So I like that it adds, that element that they've got to kind of work at it and play with a little bit. And the unintended consequence that early on, after they've put that stuff down, it gets dirty. And all the slag off the tires and the marbles and dust and everything gets up in there in it. So you have to kind of work to clean it off. It's almost, and dare it be almost blasphemous to say it, but it's almost like dirt racing, where you get that high groove up there, it takes a little bit to get it to come in, and you got to get some guys that will go up there and work it in order to get it to really run. And we're seeing the same thing with this traction compound. If you can't just sail up in there right off the start of the weekend and have it work, you've got to kind of work at it and clean it off. And as you race, it almost builds a cushion up, and you push it higher and higher as the race goes. And depending on how you utilize it, You can make different runs, whether you dive into corners, whether you go in it and dive to the bottom coming off, depending on how you handle it. I mean, again, I'd rather not see it, and I won't be sad if they quit using it, but I'm not totally against it either, just because I feel like it has afforded the drivers the ability to kind of search and put their own skill into some things where over the last handful of years, that really wasn't the case.
Yeah, and there was definitely a ton of it, more than I can remember laid down. It was pretty much half the track, right? I mean, from definitely all the top line. And you kind of said that it was blasphemous to kind of compare it to dirt racing. But in a way, I mean, I think it was just like dirt racing. We saw a ton of slide jobs, which is rare at this level to, you know, kind of, yeah. I mean, and I think that's why some of the guys like a Tyler Reddick, who we'll get into here in a little bit, had a really good run going, had good runs. And so, again, it's I wish we could have good racing without it. And I'm not saying that this led to the great racing, because I think that the short track package definitely helped the newer one, this year's one. But that could be, I mean, we've talked about the theme to this podcast so far, 4 weeks in now, seems to be overreaction. With Ford or Toyota being out to lunch, Chevy coming back. I mean, this could just be an overreaction too. Say we go to Bristol in a couple of weeks or Richmond and it sucks. I mean, you just don't know. We're racing off one race is what we've got. But it couldn't get much worse than last year. So I am happy for that.
Truth.
And also, I mean, this is what NASCAR needed, because you think about it, the championship race this year is in Phoenix. There's no doubts about that. So they needed a good showing, I believe, first time out. And I think that's what they got, because if this is any indication, which I would think it would be, you know, come 8 months from now, I think we'll have a pretty good championship weekend in all three series.
And I'll just throw something out here, and it's completely off the wall and spitballing and probably will never have a shot. But if Tyler Reddick manages to win a race and can keep himself in contention to make the final four, that dude's got a shot at Phoenix. Absolutely has a shot at Phoenix. And especially if you think about the fact that by then he'll have a whole season under his belt in the Cup cars. And he'll have, you know, gone to a few tracks and learned some things. I would not put it past that kid to shock the world and win it as a rookie at Phoenix in this new format because of how good he looked. And I seriously feel like he'll win a race this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely been the most impressive rookie so far, even if he doesn't have the results necessarily. But he did have an 11th place last weekend in Fontana. And he's just, I would imagine, just going to get better because he's so new to this. As will Cole Custer, who finished 9th over the weekend. And Christopher Bell, who's really, I hate to say it, but hasn't done a whole lot this year at all.
Yeah, speaking of bad luck,
yeah,
he's been up there too.
Yeah, whether it was a crash Daytona or engine at Fontana, regardless, I think Reddick, I had Bell making the playoffs, but Reddick might be the guy, might be the rookie that makes it, or Custer, you never know. Again, might just be overreacting. We're only 4 weeks in, but a lot of people always say that, you know, once you get through the West Coast swing, you know what you have for the year, so That too might be an overreaction. Neff, we, you know, we're, what, 15 minutes in almost, and we haven't even talked about the winner at all yet. Joey Logano got a second win of the season. He won Vegas a couple weeks ago, didn't really dominate that race, won because of a strategy call from Paul Wolf. This week he didn't dominate either, but all the talks about, you know, the Chevys this year and Toyotas being lackluster, even though I don't think that's necessarily the case. But is Ford the best team right now, Ford being Team Penske?
Man, that's
Blaney's. I mean, look at what Blaney's done.
Blaney and Logano have definitely been fast. The two a little off, although, you know, they were in the mix.
He led 82 laps on Sunday.
Granted, it was more of a strategy play, but he was fast. I mean, it wasn't, you know, he was leading for a reason
with some damage too.
Yeah, but I mean, Toyota definitely isn't. So it's a matter of, do you think Chevys are on par with the Fords? And I'm
absolutely
not seeing Stuart Haas up there consistently gives me a little pause on that. But yeah, in the grand scheme of things, I think your thing Ford is on top right now. Chevy second, and Toyota, surprisingly, I don't want to call it distant third, but further back than you would expect from them.
Right. And this, I mean, this kind of scary how much the start of this year resembles last year. Because last year, you had Keselowski win the second race, which was then in Atlanta. Logano won Vegas, which he won this year too. And then the sixth race of the year, which was at Martinsville last year, Keselowski won. So they won three of the first six. This year they've won two of four so far, both being Logano. Blaney's right there. I know he didn't really get to show anything over the weekend at Phoenix, but there was a good chance he was going to run top five, if not, you know, even better. So I think Penske's definitely got the best team right now. Hendrick's there because Chase Elliott had another good performance over the weekend. Won the pole, led a bunch of laps.
And then had a loose wheel.
Correct. And then he still rebounded for a solid finish, though. And then, you know, Kevin Harvick, he's the only driver with all top tens in all four races so far. So he's just doing Kevin Harvick things. He hasn't won yet, but I would say that's coming very soon. Possibly even this weekend because he's very good at Atlanta. So I think Penske definitely gets the notch for me. But I said the same thing last year, and then they just fell off the second half of the year. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. And I don't know. Do you feel like it's an overreaction of the whole West Coast swing? You know what you have after the West Coast swing? I kind of do.
You have a decent idea because you've hit every type of race.
Right. Now. Right.
You know, you've had the short track in Phoenix, although there are those who argue that it's not a short track. You have the intermediates of Fontana and Vegas, and then you had the super speedway at Daytona. So you've had all types of tracks, and you've had a chance to play with your car in all configurations. So you have a rough idea. I'd like to fine-tune it a little bit. Let's see how we are after another three or four races. I've always been one to maintain that when you get to the All-Star race is when you really know if you're going to be contended for a championship or if you're out here testing for next year.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, Neff, we brought up Tyler Reddick. I definitely want to hit on him quite a bit right here. So, you know, there was talk going on Saturday that he was really bummed with how the speed of his car. Qualified 29th, just seemed super bummed from what I've heard from other media members who were at Phoenix. Didn't think he had anything on Sunday. But once that race started, that 8 car just soared up the scoreboard. He got in the top 20 very quickly, then top 15, top 10. Got as high as second in the IM second sponsored car, which I thought was funny. But, I mean, obviously had some bad luck late, having a flat tire. Ended up finishing, 33rd. So he doesn't get the result, and there's always going to be highs. The highs are going to be very high with Tyler. At least this is my opinion. The highs are going to be high. Two championships in the Xfinity Series. But the lows are going to be lows. I mean, think of 2018. Yeah, he won the championship in Xfinity, but it was not a good year. He would tell you the same thing. So highs are going to be high. Lows are going to be low. But he's got off to a really solid start this year. And I know we kind of brushed on it a few minutes ago, but, man, he's looking Daniel Hemric look really bad right now.
That's true, too. It's a different team because he got to bring his man Randall along to be the crew chief. So they actually have their winning team from last year now all in the Cup Series. But, he's proven over the years that he's got talent. And if you give him a decent car, it doesn't even have to be a great car. You give him a decent car, he will squeeze everything out of it and give you a shot at winning. And I've been talking with Randy a few different times last season. He admitted that they made some bad calls and didn't do what they needed to with the car, and Tyler's talent overcame it. So it's, like I said, I will be surprised if he doesn't win a race this year at some point. And when the playoffs roll around, it'll be a challenge for him to be in the top four at the end. But if he is, I would not want to be running against him at Phoenix.
Yeah. I mean, he's 25th in points, so the results haven't exactly been there. He's tied with, I guess, Corey LaJoy and Ty Dillon for 23rd. But based on finishes, he'd be 25th. But yeah, back to the Hemric point, though. I mean, we saw what Daniel did last year, and granted, I mean, we both think Daniel Hemric's a really good race car driver. He just hasn't won a race yet. Yeah. He just hasn't won a race yet in the top three series. And you know, look to this weekend, too. He made a mistake in the Xfinity race, got involved in a crash, and I mean, that's two out of three races so far with Junior Motorsports where he's not finished. So, and last week at Fontana wasn't great either, so we're going to Atlanta this weekend. Hopefully he runs well for his sake, because he's got a lot to prove in these races. He's got 21 of them with Junior Motorsports, arguably the best Xfinity team. Obviously, though, right now it looks like Gibbs is probably the best, even with their young core. It's funny because we were talking offline. These two drivers have kind of mirrored each other in terms of where they've gone. So, you know, you think back to what, 15, 16 or so. They both ran for Brad Keselowski Racing in the Truck Series. Reddick could win, Hemric could not. 2017, they both leave. Hemric goes Xfinity Racing full time with RCR. Ran really well at times, but he would tell you, as well as, I mean, you could just look at the stats, that at that time, RCR was not that good of an Xfinity program. They also had five teams that could lead to it, five full-time teams.
Yeah, that was rough.
Meanwhile, Reddick did a part-time schedule at Chip Ganassi Racing and won a race at Kentucky by half a lap. Fast forward to 2018, both in the Xfinity Series, Reddick moved to Junior Motorsports and just, as we talked about, won the championship. While Hemric made the championship four, but never won a race still. And then last year, Hemric obviously moved up to the Cup Series with RCR. Meanwhile, Reddick moved over to RCR and won six races in the same car, essentially, that Hemric a year prior could not win a single race. So,
yep.
And then we got this year. I mean, up to second this past week at Phoenix, it's just, he's making him look really bad right now. And I feel bad for Daniel, but I feel like he's got a lot to prove, and he knows that, and hopefully for his sake he does. If not, this could be his last opportunity with Junior Motorsports. You know what I mean? Like, his last real good opportunity in Cup or in NASCAR.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta. There's no question the challenge has been laid down that, you know, Daniel has proven that he's a great driver by the success he had in Legends cars. Mm-hmm. You can drive a Legends car, you can drive anything. But we've gone past the what's the word I'm looking for? But the goodwill that he had built up at the lower series, and it's time to win at the national level now. And so he's taking that step back to be in junior equipment, so you know you're in some of the best equipment in Xfinity. And now it's on his shoulders. There's nobody else that can take the blame. There's nothing else that can go on. He's had multiple opportunities in different organizations. So the time is now. And like you said, I'm a huge fan of Daniel. And I feel like that day's going to come for him. But, man, it really needs to come this year. If he doesn't win a race this year, it's going to be really hard for him going forward to stay in quality equipment.
For sure. And also because he's not bringing a ton of funding to the table. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully for his sake, he can win a couple races at least in Junior Motorsports equipment. but good for Reddick. I mean, I don't think, I know, you know, obviously, I feel like people have overlooked him kind of his whole career so far. And he's proven a lot of people wrong and winning back-to-back Xfinity Championships, having a dominating year last year, having 27 top 10s, very consistent, opposed to the year before where he was not consistent. It's not shocking to see him run well so far in Cup, just four races in. He did, I know, two races last year, Daytona and Kansas, where he had a top 10 at Kansas, let's not forget. So, we're going to Atlanta this week. I mean, who knows? He runs well at tracks like this, where you can get up on the wheel, there's worn-out asphalt, so Reddick's definitely been impressive, but enough. I'm looking at the standings right now, and I'm looking at guys who have maybe not been impressive this year, or maybe I thought they would have more of an upside this year, at least to start off the year. William Byron 19th, I mean, that's disappointing, but I think he'll rebound. Eric Jones 21st, I mean, I know Toyota's been out to lunch, but he hasn't done a whole lot of anything yet this year.
Other than winning a Busch crash.
Correct. Then you go down to like 32nd in points. And Christopher Bell, I mentioned Chris Seabell. He's only got 26 points for the year. He's behind Ryan Newman, who, remember, only ran Daytona so far because of that crash. David Ragan, who got a top five in Daytona, but only has run Daytona. He's behind Suarez, who missed the Daytona 500 and is running in Toyota equipment with a lesser-funded team. And then you look at, like, Ryan Preece, who's 33rd, who's had a lot. You talk about bad luck. He's had a lot of it. Yep. Who's been your biggest disappointment? And this, is again, might be an overreaction because we're only 4 weeks in, but who would you say is the biggest surprise or disappointment of the year?
I mean, and it's hard, again, because of luck. You know, I mean, as we talked about, Blaney was leading the points, but he's had some terrible luck. He beat him again this weekend.
He went from having an 11-point lead in the points to now being 6th, 41 back, because of that last-place finish. So, yeah, I mean, it can change on an instant.
Yeah, DNFs will kill you in the sport. Bell's the same thing. You know, he's in the mix, and you see him up there, and then something happens, and it bites him. Elliott has run really well, but they've had a couple pit issues with loose wheels, and we'll get in. I'd like to get into that briefly here in a minute, but if I have to pick one, I'm going to say Eric Jones. I know, and like you said, we know Toyota has struggled, but it seems like there have been at least two incidents that I can think of that were entirely Eric's fault and has resulted in him having lesser finishes than he should have this year. And I think, and again, I think there's pressure on his shoulders right now, mm-hmm. because you've got Christopher Bell sitting there, and Bell is helping him out right now.
He is.
You know, if Bell's running top 10 right now in the 95, Jones is really worried. But since Bell's been struggling too, it's kind of helped him out. But it's similar to Hemric. It's put up or shut up time for Jones. I know he's won races, but he really needs to start performing at that next level in that equipment, or the noise is going to start building about putting Bell in a 20 and moving Jones down to the 95 or moving Jones elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, too. I think it's tough because Bell's had a lot of bad luck. I would go Bell only because he's behind some of the guys, like I said, in points. He's 32nd. You could argue Priest, too, because Priest, I mean, his rookie year last year didn't go as planned. I know, you know, JTG doesn't have the it's tough to say they don't have the resources because they have full sponsorship. Now, how much sponsorship are, you know, money is being spent every week? Who knows? I mean, obviously, they're right. Probably a second-tier team. But he's had no luck, and, I mean, he definitely has, you know, like I said, he has the funding. He has, you know, people behind him. But how long does that run, you know? I don't know. It's just something to think about going forward because and then you got teams like, you know, drivers like Matt DiBenedetto, who's top 10 in points. We expected him to run well this year, but I would say he's ahead of Keselowski in points, 5 points behind Blaney. So he's definitely run very well. Then you got like Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin 11th and 12th in points, Truex 15th. You could argue Truex been the biggest disappointment, just because he can't finish a race.
That's similar to Jones too. I mean, he's had a couple of these incidents. He may like to say that other people kind of put him in some awkward situations, but he's had a couple incidents here of smacking a wall where he smacked the wall.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's anybody to blame but themselves, and that has put them at a huge disadvantage. The other thing is they keep coming from the back. They've started in the rear of the field twice now in four races.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't help things any.
It's crazy that the highest Toyota is 11th in points. I'm just realizing
that's
that.
Pretty
Neff, anything else on the Cup race or Cup series before we move to Brandon Jones winning Xfinity?
The one thing I did want to touch on, I touched it briefly talking about Chase Elliott. They've had a couple loose wheel issues. There have been some other vehicles that have had loose wheel issues. I was reading some stuff on Twitter last week during the one lug nut fiasco, and there was discussion about the Paoli guns. And that is, for those of you that don't know, Paoli is a supplier for the guns that NASCAR issues to the teams, which was an answer to trying to save money because Joe Gibbs Racing was spending an enormous amount of money to make their guns really fast. And Paoli promised some things that they have still not delivered, and basically wireless telemetry data on torque of the lug nuts and things like that. But the bottom line is, at least the rumor, and I have not been able to confirm it with any sources, so this is purely speculation on my part, but the rumor has been that word came down from the glass tower in Daytona to shut up about the guns and not complain and not point fingers when loose lug nuts happen. But there have been, from what I understand from a source, at least 4 gun failures this year on pit lane, which isn't an inordinate amount. I mean, back when everybody was using Thunder guns, you had, you know, every race or so you'd have a gun failure. So that's not an excessive amount. But when they're supposed to be provided by NASCAR in an equal playing field for everybody, and you end up having some failures like that, it's not a good thing. And next year, when we do go to the single lug nut, that is Paoli's wheelhouse. They've been the gun for IndyCar for a long time with the single lug nut deal. So we will see next year if they're able to shine or if they continue to struggle. But for now, we're still living with these Paoli guns at the 5 lug nut world. And I know some of the crazy Chase Elliott fans have been wanting to hang the pit crew, but I think you need to ease back a little bit and make sure that it's not an equipment problem before you start hanging guys out to lunch.
Even while discussing this, while you were talking about it, I still can't believe we're going to one lug nut next year.
I can't either. And again, grumpy old get off the pit box guy, it just bothers me from the loss of that skill. I mean, the fact that you have guys that can take 5 lug nuts off, swap out a tire, and put 5 lug nuts on in 3 seconds is just mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. And to watch them do it, you know, up close and see the speed that these guys have doing that, it's just insane. And all that goes out the window next year. I mean, it's basically, you're going to go up, the lug nut is mounted to the wheel, so there's no worry about losing a lug nut or anything like that. I promise you'll have a bunch of cross threads the first few races till the guys get used to it, and we'll have guys head down pit lane and the wheel fall off and everybody will lose their minds. But it just, to me, it makes me sad that we lose that skill, and pit stops are now going to come down to how long it takes to get fuel in the car.
And I think,
or how much fuel you want to take.
That, and I think there's going to be a lot of speeding penalties next year because, like you mentioned, the human element's pretty much gone now. The pit stops are pretty much going to be the same time. It's not going to take all that long unless, like you said, take more fuels or less fuel. So I would imagine there's going to be more speeding penalty because you got to gain or want to gain time somewhere. But ultimately, that would make you lose time if you speed. So people are definitely going to be pushing the limit. Not that they do now, or not that they don't now. But it's something that I guess we're just going to have to adjust to next year for sure. Seeing it, watching it, the teams, interesting. But now, I want to talk quickly about Brandon Jones. He is our podcast guest later in the show. But he beat Kyle Busch for the win this week at Phoenix. You know, it ties into the whole subject last week that we had after Harrison Burton won at Fontana, how you shouldn't worry about these young guys at Joe Gibbs Racing. They've proven to develop in the past, and it looks like right now, Brandon, you know, I know it took him 133 races to get his first win, but now he has 2 in the last 8 races, and he looks really good because he probably could have had 2 in a row after sweeping the first 2 stages at Fontana.
Without a doubt, I've followed Brandon for a long time. I remember seeing him race in local short tracks in the Southeast, And like you said, Joe Gibbs has an eye for talent, and Jones has made some mistakes and taken some heat about that because of things that he's done in the past. But I feel like, especially Saturday, you saw his talent come to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
And he had three or four opportunities to throw that race away and drove like a champ and basically held off Busch. Like I said, I think Busch hurt his tires with those moves on the apron because I think they've really scrubbed a lot off of them for the couple laps that he did it. But in the end, Jones had a really fast car and didn't make the mistakes. And when you have a fast car and don't make mistakes, you're going to be in contention. He took advantage of an opportunity presented to itself. So I think we're just seeing the surface now that the confidence is coming in, and you get a guy with talent that has confidence too, that could be very dangerous.
It's got to be such a boost of confidence for him, not only him, but Harrison, because Harrison finished second ahead of Kyle. So for those two guys to finish ahead of the best Xfinity driver of all time, the best truck driver of all time, I would imagine, especially satisfying for Harrison after, you know, last year in the truck series, how that went. But then they also beat Brad Keselowski. So two former Xfinity and Cup champions, you know, mind you. So it's going to be a load of confidence for them. And Brandon, I mean, he was a sneaky pick last year. I know he didn't make it out of the first round of the playoffs. But had he made it out of the first round of the playoffs, which he got involved in a wreck at Dover, the cutoff race on the first lap with Harrison Burton on the restart. But had he made it out of it, which I thought, I mean, he came into like 15 points out or so, but I think he could have raced his way in. Had he done that, he won Kansas, he would have went to the Final Four. This year he brings all, you know, more experience, seemingly a better team, a weaker field, at least at the top. He's a sneaky pick to get to Phoenix, and if he does get to Phoenix, well, we just saw what can happen. Even though, in the past, it hasn't been one of his better tracks. His best finish prior to Saturday was 7th and 8th starts. So you never know. Phoenix is definitely a tricky track, at least for him. He'll tell you that in the interview. But, yeah, good for Brandon, and really the whole young core of drivers at the Joe Gibbs Racing Xfinity team, because they're proving they're worth a damn. And a lot of people, they got a lot of hate preseason, and they're kind of showing people that, you know, don't worry about us, we'll be fine, which is what they set out to do at the beginning of the year.
Yep.
Anything else, Xfinity?
I don't think so.
All right, we got three topics left, three pretty big topics. And you know what they are, the Busch class, Tony Stewart, or the Penske Blaney re-signing Keselowski quote. Which one do you want to talk about, Neff? I'll give you the floor.
Oh, my God. If you're going to give me that, we're going to Daytona.
All right. Here we go.
I understand
let's,
that the Busch Clash is a exhibition race. And over the last few years, it's been less than stellar. At the same time, and I want to say it was 1986, but I'm not positive, they had 7 cars in the race.
Yeah, there's a lot of the years they've had 7 or 8 cars in the race.
There have been years where it hasn't had that many cars in it. We have plenty of cars this year. You do a lot of riding around, and then you tear up a bunch at the end. So how about we just cut it down to 20 laps and say, go have at it, and you want to make it really exciting, you know, make it $1 million to win or whatever, but pay an equal amount for every lap that you lead. That'll get exciting because you won't have guys riding in the end, and then they'll be going after it every single lap. But instead, let's put it on the Roval, and yes, it's a Roval, at Daytona at night. Nobody asked for this ever. And now you got all sorts of people like, oh, this is going to be cool. This is going to be awesome. And in the interest of transparency, I hate night racing at the Cup level to begin with. There should be 2 Cup night races a year, the All-Star race and the Bristol night race. Everything else should be daytime races. Racing at night sucks because the cars have a ton of grip. They're really easy to drive. And it just, the only thing you get is like the Bristol Night Race when guys had to wreck each other to get them out of the way. Now you can't even wreck each other, so you just get really lousy racing. So I'm totally against night racing across the board, except for the two that I mentioned. So that's one strike against it. Now we're going to go to the Roval in stock cars, which the Roval in Charlotte was cool. The first year, the second year was average at best. I don't know what we're going to see.
Well,
and I'm curious to see how they're going to light up the middle of the road course because dark. There's no lights in the infield there.
Yeah, very
so
dark.
So are we going to get headlights in the cars? Are we going to do the cool underglow stuff they did at Vegas for the burnout competition? Or are we just going to have everybody that camps in the infield turn their headlights on their campers so it lights up the track?
Well, so there's a lot that goes into this. And it's the camping parts are interesting because it's going to eliminate a lot of the camping and it's going to eliminate some of the parking.
Eliminate the camping on Tuesday. And then you'll have a bunch of people that'll come in Wednesday or Thursday that'll be fine for camping.
It's still interesting that they would take that, have that protocol to go about, because I mean, I'll tell you, Wednesday for media day this year, just 4 weeks ago, it was packed on Tuesday when I was at the track. And then Wednesday, I mean, the infield had tons of people. It was probably the best infield crowd.
Infield was absolutely slam full this year. It's the fullest I've seen it in over a decade.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, I would imagine you're eliminating at least some of it until, or at least postponing it until Wednesday because the races run on Tuesday night, which this is part of the bigger theme, right? So it's no longer speed weeks, it's speed week at Daytona, which I'm okay with. I'm okay with that. It's down to 6 days. There's going to be something going on at the track every day, Tuesday through Sunday. Daytona 500 qualifying's on Wednesday, the duels Thursday, trucks Friday, ARCA and Xfinity on Saturday, which that's interesting, and then the 500 obviously on Sunday. So I'm overall a fan of that change. I am not a fan of the Busch class being run under the lights on the road course. It's a 3.56 mile road course. You're going to have maybe 20 cars in the show. It's going to get spread out very quickly. We're going around the garages that none of these drivers really want to even race this race. I don't know. I feel like there, like you said, there was something else that could have been done, at least on the oval, 20 laps, 15 laps, payouts, something. But this is going to get very old very quickly because there's going to be really no, and this is coming from a road course fan. I love road courses, but not this one because I see where they're coming from with the concept and the idea, but I'm not a fan at all.
I think it's a gimmick. I understand they're trying to do something different, and they've had fans clamoring for short tracks and road courses, but it just doesn't do anything for me. It's the purpose of the Clash is to wet your whistle and get you fired up for speed weeks and first time seeing Cup cars on track and you get all excited about it. And now we're just seeing a throwaway race to use up the end of last year's inventory before we go to the new car next year. And instead of tearing them up on oval, we're going to bang them up on the Roval.
And that's a good point too, is that we're using last year's cars. Well, I guess this year's cars, then it would be last year. So we're using the 2020 car. I don't know. This is, because I feel like the Busch Clash over the years has promoted the Daytona 500. This is what you're going to see, potentially.
Yeah.
Granted, over the years, the past few years, it's been single file. You know, we've seen Memorial Day parades that are more entertaining. But at the end.
Until
then
they tore
the end.
Them all up.
Exactly.
And they told us this year, that's what's going to happen at 500. And I'm like, nah, they're not going to do that in a 500. And what'd they do? Tore them all up at the end of the 500.
Granted, they didn't run single file the entire race. But, yeah, it promotes the action that you're going to see. The road course has nothing to do with the 500. It's going to look nothing like it. However, they're going to be probably hauling ass into turn one, which will be interesting to see. But I'm not a fan. But they need to do something about it. So I guess Maybe this is a test trial. If it goes good, then great. But it's tough to see it going well. Hopefully we're wrong, Neff. Hopefully we're wrong.
Test trial for what? You think they're going to run the Roval in...
No, to see what they'll do.
The second Daytona race?
No. So I don't think that, but maybe...
Oh, God.
I do not think that, but in terms of what they're going to do with the Busch Clash moving forward. Like, are they going to keep it? Or are they going to move it back to the Oval? Once you're away from the Oval, it seems like you're probably not going to go back. I don't know. It'll be... I think it's a test trial. But I would hope for sure that it's definitely not a test trial for the what is now the August race. That would be not good.
Hideous.
But speaking of road course, Neff, you know, we talked about the Indy one a few weeks ago. It was announced... it was announced last Wednesday, the same day as the Busch Clash, that Tony Stewart's returning to the Xfinity Series for the inaugural race on the road course at Indy. Obviously, Indy is his home track. On July 4th, it's first time the NASCAR is using the track. I think it's a big deal to have that name in the track or in the race. We talked about whether we like the race, the concept, because Indy, you know, the past 3-4 years been a pretty good race for the Xfinity Series.
Yep.
So then they change it, and I mean, hey, this is coming. Roger Penske made the change. I trust Roger Penske. One of the best businessmen, probably in the world. But this, I mean, adding a name like Stewart's a pretty big deal, right?
Sure. I mean, it's there's plenty of intrigue in having Stewart come to the race, but I'd have had just as much excitement if he was running on the Oval. I'd have more excitement if he was running at IRP, but we won't beat that dead horse anymore today. Again, similar to the Clash, I don't think anybody was asking for this. I mean, I've heard people asking for Cup on the road course, which, God, I hope they don't do that. But the Xfinity race the last 3 years with the plates has been really good. And they finally figured it out. They finally had good races. So let's screw it up and do something different. It frustrates me when we change things for the sake of changing things, not necessarily for the better. And I mean, it's cool seeing Smoke get back in a car. I love it. I would love to see more of it, more one-off type things. Road course, I understand, because the driver makes a difference. And that was why he got out of the cars, was because the driver didn't make a difference anymore. So I'm glad to see that he's going to be on a road course because he can still showcase his talent. And those cars are tough to drive, so putting them on the road course make it interesting. But I still wish we'd have kept them on. Well, I wish we'd have kept them at IRP, but if we're not going to have an IRP, I wish we'd have them on the Oval with the plates just because it's been working. And I know, I'm glad to see Tony do it. You know more than I that there's rumors going around that he's probably going to do another road course on top of it.
I'll jump in here. So, you know, Stewart returning is, I first heard about it at Daytona from a source. And then also, you know, it started picking up some steam. And then I've heard from multiple sources that it seems like he's going to run the Roval as well in the Xfinity playoffs this year, which will be, you know, good because he's never run on the Roval. I think he would, as you said, he'd make a difference, and he's got a very good road course background. He's won 8 times in the Cup Series on road courses. One of the best we've ever seen on road courses at the Cup Series. So adding his name to the Xfinity Series at Indy is a pretty big deal, in my opinion. Obviously, it's his home track. He has a ton of success there, whether it's IndyCar, especially NASCAR, though, with the 2 Brickyard wins. I think it's a huge deal for that. And it'll definitely sell some tickets where, you know, I mean, let's face it, that track hasn't been the best-selling tickets for NASCAR in some time. So, you know, granted, it's the Xfinity race on a road course, so I don't know. I don't think necessarily we'll ever see him again in a Cup car, maybe on a road course. Who knows? But I personally don't think so. But this is cool. It's also... You know, it's a cool opportunity for the drivers of the Xfinity Series. Chase Briscoe, he could probably learn a ton from Tony, even though Chase is a pretty decent road course racer himself. I mean, let's face it, He won the first Roval race and dominated last year's and finished third or fifth or something. He faded late. But anyway, I think it's a big story, Tony coming back.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big deal having him in it. And like I said, anytime we get these older guys that have retired to come back and do one-offs is a cool thing. But it's, again, I'd rather see him in on the oval doing it. I don't know. I was just getting on here trying to look up the Clash races, because he's won the Clash before, I'm pretty positive.
Yeah, and he must have.
That was always the rules with the All-Star race was if you'd won it in the last 10 years, you could still run it. The rules at the Clash has always been if you ever won it, you could go back and run it again. And that was how Ken Schrader used to keep running the thing 15, 20 years after he won the actual race. So you never know. That we're putting them on the road course at Daytona, maybe Stewart will come down and...
That is a good point.
And run that. That would be an interesting.
That would be interesting. Anything else on those two topics?
No, I think I'm beating
it to death. Your rants are done. Well, Neff, on Friday, Ryan Blaney, it was announced that Ryan Blaney re-signed with Team Penske for a multi-year deal. Good for him. He was one of the top, I would say, possible prospects out there onto potentially moving away from a team. But that's locked up. He said they've been working on it a few months. So that's good for him, and I think it's a huge deal because Ryan Blaney is a guy who's you know, we talk about Bubba being good with sponsors. Blaney, great with sponsors, got a big fan following behind him. He's very good at like social media and stuff like that. So I think he was definitely, and let's face it, he's going to be cheaper than a bigger name like we're going to get to here in a minute. So it's good for him and good for Penske because he's a guy that you need to nail down and a guy that you're going to take time and make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed.
Without a doubt, you're looking at one of the superstars of the sport for the next 15 to 20 years.
Right.
And he's shown the talent, and there's going to be a lot of people knocking on his door anytime they think that there's an opening that they can get him in. So locking him up for multiple years was a smart move, without a doubt, by Roger. And I'm glad for Ryan. Like I said, I think he's truly one of the stars of the sport. And I love him from the off-the-track stuff. I mean, he handles adversity well. You know, the last couple disappointing finishes, he's not shied away from questions. He's been more than willing to face the media. Went to the bullpen at, I think it was at Fontana. He didn't finish in the top 10, but he still went because they asked him to, which was nice. But I think, yeah, I think you're going to have a lot of people trying to come get him. So locking him up long-term is a wise move. And that then takes us back to our discussion about Brad Keselowski because, let's face it, he's the standard bearer at Penske. And to be in the last year of your contract and see the young punk getting an extension and you don't have one yet, that's enough to make you want to explore your options.
But I think there's more to it than that. And I mentioned bigger name earlier. I didn't mean a disrespect to Ryan Blaney about that. But let's face it, Brad has brought a ton of success to Penske. He brought him their first championship in 2012, first Brickyard win 2018. He's done a lot for that company over the past decade or so since he's been there since 2010. So then you hear all these, you know, rumors circulating around, like, is Brad retiring? That was a rumor that was circling around. And there's no way, right? Brad's mid-30s, very competitive, and he shook that off this weekend too, said no way. You know, I plan on racing for another 10 years or so.
Yeah, he's at his peak right now.
For sure. And, you know, he's won a ton in the past decade, and he's won a championship. So he's one of the top names in the sport right now. However, it is interesting that he was quoted by saying, someone asked him about, you know, all the openings that could be out there following this year, and he said, And I quote, "I'm not dialing out, but if somebody dials in, I'll certainly listen for sure." Now that, you know, no inside knowledge here, but that seems like a guy that is leaving. And if you look at that closely, and you look at it, I mean, Brad has earned the right to get a long, big contract, a ton of money. And that's something that owners don't do now. Team owners don't spend a ton of money on their drivers. I mean, you look at 2017, perfect example. You take out Kenseth out of the 20 after 2017, who wanted more money in that car, put in Eric Jones, who's got a lot less money. Now, granted, worth a lot less money at the time, because Kenseth is, you know, he'd been around for 20 years at the time. A good instance is Ryan Newman at the end of 2018. He moved to Roush because Childress wasn't going to give him enough money, so they went the cheaper route, got Daniel Hemric. Penske could do that, but Penske's also got a ton of money. So it's interesting to have Brad kind of put this quote out there, and it in my opinion, shows where his head's at right now, just a month into the season.
Well, but, and I'm kind of on the opposite side of the fence of that. The fact that he stated, "I'm not calling out," is basically saying, you know, I'm racing this season, and I'm a Penske guy.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, when you don't have a deal for the next year, you got to listen to what offers are. And that also helps you gauge your market. I mean, let's face it, Tom Brady is looking at options right now.
Right.
He's a free agent. Keselowski is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And the way the NASCAR deals work, if you aren't buttoned up by September, you're in trouble. So he needs to be fielding offers so he's got an idea of what his market is. And then, you know, I would assume Penske is working on something or has at least made some offers. I have no knowledge of that, but it would be shocking if they hadn't. But, you know, he can then know what the offers are he's getting versus what he's being offered at Penske to decide if he wants to stick around or go someplace new. And, I mean, it's rare in this sport anymore to have guys that start and end with the same team. You know, there's a handful of them out there that have done it. And the latest one is Jimmy Johnson. That's walking away this year, having done it. But Kyle Busch has moved around. Dale Jr. moved around. You know, Logano's moved. Hamlin has been with Joe Gibbs from day one. And I will be surprised if he doesn't retire from Gibbs. But other than that, you've got guys that bounce around. And you know, sometimes a change is good. Sometimes it's bad, i.e. the Busch clash. So I think Brad's just playing the game the way he needs to and says that I interpreted that line to be, hey, I'm a Penske guy. I'm running for Roger, and I still feel like I'm a Roger guy, but I'm absolutely going to listen to offers so I know what my market value is.
I can definitely see that point. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion that he's leaving, but it does, I don't know, definitely raise some speculation. And he's going to be, not only him, but a ton of guys that were in one-year contracts or in a last year of a contract are going to get asked about this stuff all year long. Because let's face it, this upcoming, and we've talked about this a couple times, this upcoming offseason, we're going to see the most change we've seen in NASCAR in a very long time. And it comes at an interesting point because we got the new car coming into play too. So Brad's a very smart businessman. He obviously ran the truck team for I don't know, eight years. I'm not looking that up right now, but going off memory, and he shut it down for a reason. And you know, obviously one day there's been a lot of talk of him possibly owning a cup team at one point. I don't know. I guess it wouldn't surprise me if he stayed because he has brought in that team so much success. But then you look at like Joey Logano, he's brought a ton of success too. And then Blaney's locked up. So this will be something that he's going to get asked about all year long. And from his standpoint, it's got to be so annoying to answer the same question week after week after week.
Yep.
But that's part of the gig. Who knows? Who knows what'll happen now? Any final thoughts before we get to our Brandon Jones interview?
Nope. Ready for another fantastic week at a worn-out racetrack where the tires matter. Because we know that Atlanta's going
to
be it.
For sure. And we got to get to predictions. Got a triple header there this weekend. We'll start with the truck race. You're not going to pick Angelo Ruck, right? You saw that on Twitter?
That depends. If they decide to take her up on her offer and they put her in a Kyle Busch truck, I might. Kidding.
Yeah, I'd hope.
I'm not. As much as Angela would probably do better in a Kyle Busch truck, I still don't think she would be contending for the win. And
also, they need to calm down with some of their tweets, I think. More so, what's his name, Mike?
Especially her husband.
That's what I'm saying, him.
Husband Mike.
Yeah, he's called Kevin Harvick a dipshit, and that's never ended well for anyone that's ever, you know, spoke badly of Kevin like that. Not that he even cares, not that he needs to care, but it's, I don't know. Kyle Busch would beat her in her equipment now, I think, hands down.
Oh, yeah, and that's, in all honesty, I would like to see it. to see, you know, obviously it would be a challenge because getting in her truck, there would be a ton of stuff that Kyle would want changed for the race, and they would have to thrash on that thing to make it raceable for him. But can you imagine if his team got their hands on it and tweaked it up, and he went out there and outran her in her own equipment? It would be hilarious. I mean, it would the whole thing would be, and everybody in the sport would talk about it. I don't know that it would bring you a whole lot of attention from outside the sport, but man, it would be fun to watch from inside the sport.
Which, I mean, the bounty starts this week.
Right.
So who you got? There's a big field, 38 trucks. Chase Elliott, Brennan Poole, and John Hunter are all eligible for the bounty this weekend. Who you got winning?
John Hunter is eligible for the bounty?
Yep.
Isn't that an interesting twist of fate?
Obviously, Kyle's running, so Kyle's going to be the one to beat.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle's going to win, but we don't want to take the easy one, so we got to take somebody besides Kyle. Man, as much as I want to see Grant Enfinger win another one, I'm going to go with our boy Crafton, because several years back, Crafton and I had a lovely discussion in the media center after he won, and he told me I could shut up now about him never winning races. So that was in Atlanta, so I'm going to go with Crafton to win another one in Atlanta.
Well, he hasn't won one in, what, almost 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
So he needs to win one. I'm going to go with Brett Moffitt. This year hasn't gotten off to the start that he'd like. Granted, there's only
been... I was looking at him, too. I was thinking that might be a good call.
There's only been two races, but he's got an average finish of 14.5. I think he gets it done. I mean, let's be honest. Kyle's probably going to win. But if anyone else wins, I think it'll be Brett Moffitt. We also got an Xfinity race in F.
Kyle going for 8 in a row.
That's crazy. Ooh. In any type of racing, that's crazy. Xfinity race, who you got?
I feel like I'm doing the Biffle thing, but I'm going with... Actually, I'm not going with him. I was going to go with Allgaier, because he's got to win a race. Got to. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say Myatt Schneider. Schneider has been running pretty good in that 21 when he's in it, and I feel like old worn-out racetrack, I think, will give him a shot. So I'm going to go with Myatt Schneider.
That is a good pick. Good kid, too. I'm going to go Brandon Jones, our podcast guest. You know, he had a top five in Atlanta last year. Atlanta's not been his favorite track over the years. But if you look at – he's on a run to start this year. He probably should have won Fontana. He'll talk about that in the interview coming up, how he wished there was, you know, he's going for 3 in a row this weekend and having back-to-back wins. But unfortunately for him, did not win Fontana, had the best car, I would say. Did win this week at Phoenix, so I think Brandon Jones goes back-to-back. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people this year. I think he gets 4 or 5 wins. I know it's a big number. I know Briscoe said he expects 8 to 10, but 4 to 5 is not out of the question, I don't think, being in a Joe Gibbs racing car with his experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's what I think you're probably right on that. Briscoe's another one you definitely got to be watching this weekend because he's going to be good down there.
I agreed. Now we got the Cup Series. I noted earlier Kevin Harvick's going to probably be pretty good, maybe the guy to beat. But Atlanta always is pretty entertaining, especially if you get a late race caution. You're probably going to be pitting for four tires. Neff, who you got?
Yeah, and you don't want to restart on the outside.
No, not at all.
This is another one of those tracks where I wish we could do a choose cone, but unfortunately the greatest drivers in the world are incapable of handling that. So, we just talked about him. Let's go with Keselowski.
You stole my pick.
Sorry.
He's really good there, though. He's got in the last.
He's strong at that track, and again, it's one of those deals similar to this weekend where he'll get on some off tire strategy and make a set last extra long or something to put himself in that position where they have a fresh set at the end, and he'll make it work.
Yeah, I think Brad's the pick. I think he's going to be the guy to beat the last three races there. He has top two finishes in all three with two victories. Hasn't led a lot of laps in any of the three. It led 38 in 2018. That was the most he's led in any of the three. Since you went him, I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to go with Harvick, who's probably the next pick. I'll go Blaney. His luck's got to change at some point. He's been top two or three fastest cars all year. I know he didn't get to show it last weekend at Phoenix, but I got Ryan Blaney going to victory lane at Atlanta this weekend. Neff, any final thoughts?
Keep your eyes on Matt DiBenedetto. Dude is ahead of all of his former Joe Gibbs teammates in the points right now.
He is.
And he is going to win a race this year, and they're going to party like it's 1999 when it happens. It's going to be an amazing experience. But he's living up to expectations, which is a cool thing. The fact that there were expectations and the fact that he's living up to them, I think is a really cool deal in that 21 car. And before this year's over, we're going to have a whale of a party.
Agreed. All right, Neff, we got a good interview coming up with Brandon Jones, who talks about his win last weekend at Phoenix, as well as, you know, his outlook for the 2020 season. Got off to a great start, as I mentioned. So let's get to my conversation with Brandon Jones.
How's it going, man?
Hey, Brandon, how are you?
Very good.
Cool.
Way better after this weekend.
Oh, I'm sure. So I want to talk to you about this weekend, if that's cool with you.
Yep.
Cool. So we'll get started here in 3, 2, 1. All right, Brandon, you started 8th at Phoenix and obviously wound up the victor. So take us through your weekend as a whole.
So in practice, we were pretty decent in practice, I thought, throughout the first session. And this year they've been kind of cutting back to second practice some. Mm-hmm. So we kind of had a plan in the second practice to just make a long run. And that was our goal. And didn't really fire off exactly how he wanted to in that practice. And Jeff Mindring's, you know, he just said, let's just keep running and see what happens. And so I think we made about 20 laps or so in practice. And we're like, man, I don't know, that's pretty good long run speed. So going to qualifying, I was watching a bunch of S&T trying to figure out exactly what line to take and how much to arc the corner out and how much to drive into the corner. And I had a bunch of things going through my head and thought I laid a pretty decent lap down. And track had a bunch of grip in qualifying, and then it was only, I think, a tenth from about 8th to 2nd on lap time. So that was a pretty tight field, and it's definitely tighter than it has been in the past for qualifying-wise. In the race, we just kind of needed some track position and some firewall speed, honestly, to lead more laps, I think, throughout the day. At one point, I told Jeff Mindring in the race, I said, man, we're just lacking track position. I mean, we've got the long-run speed that we needed. We just needed to be able to come out in front some of these guys, and our pit crew is amazing this year and had a really solid stop when it needed to be done and got the track position. Luckily, the race kind of played out at the end the way we needed it to. We didn't have a caution at the very end, and it was all kind of came together for once, and really, really cool.
Now, you mentioned you needed fire off speed and track position, but when did you realize that you had a race-winning car?
I felt like throughout the entire race, once we got to the very end of our tire cycle, I mean, we were running at least top three lap times every single time that we'd get to the end of those tire cycles. And that's the reason I was saying, I'm thinking, man, we just got to get out front, because once we do, we're going to actually run some really good lap times and no one's going to be able to catch us. As I was catching Kyle at the very end, I was watching what he was doing, and where his car was slipping up some. And, you know, I was like, man, I'm reeling him in pretty quick here. And I was reeling him in faster than I thought. And I was trying to plan my move, so when I got there, I didn't have too much time and let the third place guy catch up to us. So it was actually, I think once I got to him, he had, you know, wore his tires out enough to where it wasn't as big of a fight as I thought it was going to be.
Now, you brought up the Kyle aspect, so I want to hit on that quickly. Obviously, you passed him, like you said, for the lead late in the race, hung on for the win. What did that mean to you, knowing that you beat one of the best straight up for the win?
Man, it was just confidence, really. The first win in Kansas, you know, I passed, I think, Reddick on a restart. And, I mean, I was shaking, I was nervous. And then this one, you know, I got to Kyle, and I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting. You know, how are we going to do this? But once I got by him, I mean, it was like, I've got the car to do it. You know, I had the confidence, I was there. So, I think that was the biggest difference, really, is, you know, once you pass somebody with that title behind them, that, you're like, man, you know, we're going to be pretty good here.
Did Kyle reach out to you post race? And if so, what did he say?
Yeah, he sent me a text saying, good job. That was pretty much the end of it. I replied, just thank you. And, really, really fun to be able to race with you, but that was actually pretty cool to be able to get a text from him.
And this is obviously your third year with Joe Gibbs Racing, and you and Kyle have raced before for sure. So, and you've made 10 starts for his truck team as well. So, what's your relationship with Kyle?
Yeah, I think the truck races have definitely helped open that up some. You know, at first we're all a little timid and stuff to be able to talk to him, and the more you get around him, the more you race for him and race with him, I think the more that you know you just kind of fire back at him, you know. And so that's definitely opened up throughout the years. It's taken me a while to get there, and someone I've always looked up to racing. He's always been a heck of a competitor, so pretty cool to now, you know, be racing with him.
Now, Brandon, if you look at your stats at Phoenix, they're hit or miss. Prior to Saturday, you had a best finish of 7th and 8 starts. What is it about that track that's been so challenging for you to figure out?
Yeah, you know, luckily now, I mentioned earlier we have the SMT. That's really going to help out at all these tracks. And it's just figuring out the fine line of how deep you drive in, how much do you arc the corner out, things like that. And last year I ran, speaking of Kyle, I ran his truck at Phoenix and almost won the race. I think we finished second there to Stuart Friesen, and had a really good truck, and I think it came down to track position again. You know, if we would have had it on him, we probably would have won that race as well. So it's been a work in progress. You know, I think that's where running all these races multiple years is starting to pay off. I'm starting to figure out exactly what it takes to go fast at most of these racetracks, and it's such a technical track, but at the same time, you know, you're not using a lot of brake there either. So you just got to find the fine line of trying to roll the most speed.
Obviously thinking way down the line here, but knowing that the championship race is in Phoenix come November, does that give you a little more confidence now that, or maybe a little more excitement because you have success there?
Yes, absolutely. That was one of our actually biggest things coming into this weekend was, we just want to learn for the championship race and exactly figure out what we need when we come back and what we're going to do to improve on our finish. And obviously winning the race was big, so we're going to have a great baseline when we come back here. And if they spray the track again with PJ1, I know exactly how to run that. I took some really good notes after the race on what I needed to do to replicate what we were doing in the race. And so all that stuff is very big, and I think we can even continue to improve on our car when we come back here at the end of the year.
Now, I'm curious, because you obviously were dominating at Fontana a couple weeks ago. You won the first two stages before getting that crash. So does the victory at Phoenix kind of make up for California, or is it even kind of more frustrating because it could have been two in a row?
Man, I'm on the fence of both of those, honestly. I feel like Fontana was one of those that we would have won probably. You know, it was honestly a dominating performance throughout the day. Throughout practice, I was thinking, okay, we're going to be pretty decent. It was almost like a Phoenix Phoenix type of day. You know, I didn't think we were going to be the fastest one to qualify and the fastest to lead all the laps, but we had the car at the very end of each of those runs to be really competitive. And overnight, you know, Jeff did some really good stuff and got at the computer and did some thinking and got the car right. So I think that Phoenix definitely makes up for it. You know, I wish we could have had two in a row by now, but there's plenty of races left in the year, and we're not done winning races, I have a feeling.
And it took you 133 starts, obviously. That's well known to get your first win, but only 8 more to get your second. So from a confidence standpoint, you kind of hit on this earlier. What does adding a second win mean for you?
Yeah, it just continues to kind of prove to myself that, you know, we're here to compete and I can do it, you know, and sometimes you need that kind of stuff. And in the past, I've ran ARCA races and stuff, and, you know, I go out there and dominate those races. And, you know, the main goal behind those races is not to learn a bunch about an Xfinity car. It's to get confidence back in yourself, and it's to, you know, make sure you continue to tell yourself that, you know, you're here to win. You can still do it, and you just got to figure out what it takes in that next series, in the next level, to make it happen.
A few more for you, Brandon. There was a lot of talk, and we discussed this as well at Daytona, about the Xfinity Series driver lineup at JGR this year, with it being very young. Since Daytona, how have Riley and Harrison kind of leaned on you, and how has your relationship grown with those two drivers?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to get a relationship with them to, you know, where they can ask me anything and they feel like, you know, no question's a dumb question. You know, I hate that, you know, some people kind of are timid to ask you things that they think don't sound right or aren't right. You know, I want them to be able to ask anything, and I expect the same back from them at the same time. You know, I've asked Harrison a bunch of stuff, and both of them are already up to speed, you know, extremely quick. Mm-hmm. Harrison's got some pretty impressive stats so far in the year, and Riley's been doing a great job too. And we're in a rut right now. We're in some tough tracks. I mean, these are, you know, not the easiest ones on the schedule. So they've been doing a pretty good job at knocking at the top 10 and top fives here.
Yeah, and speaking of tough tracks, I know you mentioned earlier this year that Atlanta last year, you were surprised to run well there last year with a top five. So this weekend you're going to Atlanta, a place you finished fourth last year. What are your expectations for this weekend?
Yeah, man, I mean, shoot, you know, looking at last year, we really got good in the third stage. And so coming to this year, I'm going to go back and look at some notes, look and see exactly what I did in the last half of that race to really start to come alive. And our goal again is to win another race. I mean, that's what we're doing now. We're locked into the playoffs, and stage wins are going to be big. I noticed last year the guys that get locked in early really attack stage wins, because that's going to carry, you know, obviously through the playoffs and help you get that bigger lead on the guy behind you. So that's going to be pretty important to us. But overall result, we want to win races now.
For sure. And I'll get you out of here on this one. You know, across the sport, there's always the talk of getting through the West Coast before knowing what you really have for the whole season. With the way your West Coast swing went, you know, do you feel like the 19 team is a sneaky pick to go pretty far this year?
Absolutely, man. And I love being the sneaky one behind the scenes. You know, that's pretty fun to me. And the West Coast swing actually does a lot for you. It shows you what speed you have at a pretty fast mile and a half. You go to a 2-mile racetrack, and then you go to almost a short track at a mile. So three very different racetracks, and if you perform well at each one of those, you know, you're going to be, you know, obviously pretty good at the rest of the season. I mean, that's what our majority of the year is made up of, those three types of racetracks. So if you're good at those, you probably have a pretty bright future for the rest of the year.
Well, cool, Brandon. Thanks for your time, and good luck this week in Atlanta.
All right, Dustin. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, buddy. Congrats on the win. All right, y'all. There you have it. Fun conversation there with Brandon, who has seemingly been on a mission to start the 2020 season by dominating the first stage a couple weeks ago at Fontana, and then the win this past weekend at Phoenix. He already has 7 playoff points, which is more than he had last year, and there seems to be no sign of slowing down for that whole JGR camp, with Harrison Byrne also winning a couple weeks ago. As always, great chatting with Neff, especially when the on-track product is as good as it was this past weekend at Phoenix. I know it's just one race, but the short track package was spot on, and last year we really couldn't say the same. So hopefully, you know, come Bristol, Richmond, and other short tracks down the road, it'll work just as well. And that's it for this week's show. Again, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast, as those ratings truly do help us out tremendously. But until next week's show, where we review Atlanta, we out.